How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. It is 7:19 here on a sort of midweek Wednesday morning. It's kind of a weird week because Friday's a holiday for most people. And so you're already in the back half of the work week, everybody. That's the good news. And the further good news for everybody that will be off on Friday is that the weather forecast has improved as well for Canada Day. I've been calling for showers for most of the week. Today, still there is a chance of showers, but the dominant descriptor of the weather is now a mix of sun and clouds. So that's all good, and it's going to be a warm day, 28 for Canada Day on Friday. And the rest of the long weekend, by the way, looks really nice for Saturday and Sunday. So for those of you getting out of Dodge, and it seems like because Canada Day this year is on a Friday, it's not one of these holidays that we move or that's already on a Monday that we that automatically makes a long weekend. This year, Canada Day falling on a Friday makes it a long weekend. So I think a lot of people are getting out of town this weekend. Plus, it's the kind of kickoff to summer, and it's also the first summer in, 3 years that we've been allowed to kind of just get around on our own, however we so choose, with less pandemic restrictions. So I think it's going to be just a wild and crazy weekend.
Yeah, I think so too, JR. All that mixed in with a little football game on Thursday, and for people that can afford gas, and we are fortunate in this area, a lot of people have cottages not far away, so I agree. Hey, school's out. Summer's ready to rock and roll. Feels normal. Just a perfect time to get away and just chill for a bit.
The final hockey game of the season will go tonight. The 2022 hockey year. And if I'm missing something somewhere in the world, I apologize. And with all due respect to spring and summer hockey tournaments, not what I'm referring to because hockey is a 12-month-a-year sport now. But the final kind of official hockey game will be tonight is championship game of the Memorial Cup. And the host St. John Sea Dogs will be taking on the OHL champion Hamilton Bulldogs. So we got Sea Dogs versus Bulldogs. You had to put your money on a Sea Dog versus a Bulldog. I think I'm going Bulldog. No, if the fight happens in the water, then I'm going Sea Dog all day long. If it's on land, I'm probably going Bulldog.
Yeah, but let's first. Is the sea dog an actual animal? Is there such a thing?
I don't know. All I know is that the St. John Sea Dog logo,
one of the best in junior
is
hockey.
One of the, if not the worst logos in all, not just in junior hockey, not in, just in the queue, not just in junior hockey. I'm going to say in all of North American sport, maybe the world sport. I don't want to overstate this. But their logo may be the worst logo that I've ever seen. It was like they just gave a kid a crayon, said, you got 5 minutes to come up. What's a sea dog look like, Jimmy? Yeah. And they just gave what Jimmy gave to them, and they said, we're going to make that our logo.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that's kind of the head of a sea lion, guys, trying to look a little bit scary.
Sea lions are not scary, so that's not a good start jumping off one.
It was in 8 Below when it came out of the water there and tried to eat the dogs, but I hope I have. But in this case, Jared, you know what also happens with the design of these logos? Because until it was mentioned, I pulled it up. It's another classic case of what may, and this one doesn't even look good on paper, but by the time you put it onto the jersey, I wouldn't even be able to tell you what that is. Like when guys are skating around,
exactly.
I have no idea. And that's when teams get too busy and you look at a big drawing. Hey, you go simple, you go good. And I'll say from a Bulldog standpoint, going back to Hamilton Bulldogs, which I think was the AHL team, that to me has always been pretty solid. A Bulldog is a strong logo.
Mm-hmm.
If you got the nice collar around the neck as well.
It's always got to be a spiky collar.
Yeah, exactly.
And a Bulldog logo is always helped by the dog chewing on a bone, which the Hamilton Bulldog does.
Yeah, logo. That's not bad. Now, although the Georgia Bulldogs, also strong game when you have the little mascot there as well. But it is a, that's a good mascot.
This Sea Dog logo, you're absolutely right in that if you can't tell by the logo, what your team is all about, then you've gone the wrong direction. And so, Hammer, I don't know if you looked at this before now?
I've looked at it.
Okay.
I've tweeted it out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to kind of disagree with you guys. I really don't see, I could immediately tell that this was a ferocious sea dog.
You did.
I understood it. I knew what they were going for.
Is that water that's coming out of the back of its head?
I would have to think so.
It's working through the water.
That's what he's doing.
Okay. Now let's go legendary.
The watery flame.
Hammer, you grew up with one of the iconic sports logos of all
Belleville
time.
The Belleville Bulls.
The Belleville Bull was outstanding. Colors were great. This also reminds me a bit, JR, of when the 67s went a bit sideways with that crazy jersey they had, and I've lost track of time. Do you know what I'm talking
about? Well, that was when Jeff Hunt first started.
Okay, but everybody wanted to go kind of animated, and then they wanted to sprinkle a bunch of stuff around it. And like I said, the IHL was notorious for this, the old International Hockey League, where, you had no idea. That's kind of where football, and I love the hockey logo. I'd never get rid of it. But that's where the football helmet logo, can be so simple and so beautiful at the same time. And then you get these other ones that look so darn busy, and it doesn't work. That's why, in hockey, that's why the Habs and Rangers and Blackhawks and Toronto and the Red Wings, the simplification of a logo looks so great.
If you have a nomination, good listener, for a worse logo than the St. John Sea Dogs.
Yeah, and don't show us the New York Islanders. It has to be used now.
Yeah, it has to be used now. No, well, not so much, but it has to have been the one that was the logo for a long period of time.
Okay.
The Fisherman's Friend there was a one-off, right? That only lasted 1 year.
That was one and done.
We're talking about a logo that has either been the team's logo forever or was a long period of time, which this, and listen, the guy who we should be asking about this is Thomas Chabot, because he played for the St. John Sea Dogs.
Did he feel pride?
Well, exactly. The next time we run across Thomas, we're going to ask him that. Now, he's going to say, as an alumnus of the St. John Sea Dogs, he's going to say he's all about it. But I bet you if we filled him with truth serum, he'd say, oh, my God, every time I put that logo on, I felt great shame.
Well, you ask him, you ever met le dog de sea? was there a mascot? What did you have going on there? It is weak. Now, I'll say if I take a step back, Jared, and part of it becomes tradition and again, original six we all grew up on. I think two of the worst logos in the National Hockey League met in the Stanley Cup Final. I've never been a fan of the Bolt and all that and the Avs whole creation of the logo and the coloring.
Wording aside, I'm just talking the logo. I'm not talking about how the words are put out. I never mind. I like the lightning bolt itself. But you're right. I mean, the Tampa Bay, the overall look of it is not the great. And you're right. The Avalanche thing with the swirly sort of thing coming out of the A, it's not strong. But I kind of get what it is. If you told me Avalanche and I looked at the logo, I go, okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
I don't know what this sea dog thing is, to be quite honest with you.
It's a sea dog.
There's no such thing as a sea.
From
Why not
water?
Call them the sea lions then? That's what it is. As Simmer said, it's a sea lion. Do they? And I'm not from New Brunswick. If you're from New Brunswick,
maybe it's a nickname.
And sea lions are known as sea dogs.
Yeah.
Okay. I could be wrong here. Could be completely wrong. And I know lots of people from New Brunswick because they've all moved to Ottawa. And maybe that's the case. Maybe sea lions are known as sea dogs out there. But anyway, we'll see that logo tonight. They're hosting the Memorial Cup Championship game, final game of the hockey season, and we will see the Memorial Cup given out. Now, we will not see it given out any longer. By Dave Branch, unfortunately.
Oh, man.
Dave Branch, of course, the longtime OHL commissioner, but former president of the CHL, used to give out the Memorial Cup trophy every single year. And when it was held in the province of Quebec.
Or in the Quebec League, which this is. This would have been right up in Dave's wheelhouse.
St. John is a bilingual, New Brunswick is a bilingual province. Absolutely. He would have had to have spoken a little bit of French. But certainly when he was in Shawinigan, Quebec, and it's hard to believe, that's now 10 years ago that we got one of the best trophy presentations to the hometown Cataracts as they won the Memorial Cup.
Mesdames et messieurs, au nom de la Ligue canadienne de hockey, j'aimerais remercier et féliciter la ville de Shawinigan, la comité organization to les bénévoles et les fans de Cataract de Shawinigan pour avoir présenté la tournoi Coupe Memorial Mastercard avec beaucoup de succès. Merci beaucoup.
Yeah. The last time we had Dave on, or a couple of times ago when we were in the middle of the pandemic pause, and I asked him about that, and he's, I think he was more than happy. Yeah. He was more than happy to give up the presidency of the CHL because he no longer had to try to speak French.
Although he seemed pretty proud of it. And when they told him to do the speech, first of all, sure to shorten it up, the only thing they said is get MasterCard in there.
Yes.
I don't care what else you say. You get MasterCard mentioned, and we're good to go. And
generate reverse A felicitation.
And there's no
what
doubt.
What is that?
And there's no doubt that during the pandemic, he tutored Jeff Gordon. Like that, I can see direct lineage as those two families, the Branch and Gordon family, yeah. sit around speaking French by the campfire.
That is an all-timer.
Right. Some of the inflection on committee.
Yeah, what is that? What is that? Two.
And then two.
Oh, and then he felt like because he was getting some love from the fans.
Oh, he was
like,
getting
excited.
Oh,
my God, they're loving this.
They're buying what I'm selling.
A couple horns. And he's like, whoa, got to rev this up a bit.
All right, 7:30. Let's take a quick break when we come back. We'll get things back on the rails. Bob McKenzie's out with his draft list. Of course, right now the Sens are scheduled to draft pick 7th overall in the first round of the draft coming up next Thursday. But it feels like a lot of the fan base is already of the opinion that they're not maybe as invested in the top picks in the draft this year, because it feels like, and all the rumors have been, that Ottawa's going to going to trade out of that position either for a player or trade back further in the draft potentially to add a player plus another draft pick. But anyway, we'll go through Bob's list. Because the one thing about Bob's list is it's usually pretty accurate in terms of where he's got the players slotted is where they eventually do get picked. So we'll kind of give you that 5, 6, 7, 8 window of the players that could be in play should the Senators stay at number 7. So we'll get into all of that and much more. Don't forget Dave Poulin as our TSN Hockey Insider. He is going to join us coming up after 8 o'clock. Sean Allard from Kanata / Petawawa is going to be bringing the Stanley Cup back to this city at some point this summer. He is the skating coach for the Colorado Avalanche. He is going to join us on the show later on in this morning, and we're hoping to hook up, if he's got a couple of minutes for us, with Luke Richardson, the new head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks as well. That's all straight ahead here on a Wednesday. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. 7:36 here on a Wednesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you on bad logos in sports. A few people weighing in on that this morning at 1200. Standard messaging rates apply, by the way. Unsigned Texan said the Canucks have never had good uniforms. You know what? I beg to differ. And maybe it's because you like the original. But the old, well, it was termed the TV set with the hockey stick in it, which really, when you look at it, is just a fat C. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was pretty, and they've gone back to the blue and green color scheme. Not that we're talking color schemes. We're just talking logo. I always thought that one, but the big V that they had at one point with that was kind of gold and whatever. That was one
of the worst of all time. Yeah. I thought the original looked great, but I thought the 94 logo was really nice too, JR. I like that color scheme.
Which one is that?
I think it has a skate through it.
They've had a lot of logos. Vancouver,
they really have, yeah. And that color scheme at the time, it wasn't too over the top. So I thought both of those have been pretty good. But it's also interesting to track through how many teams have, and there was certainly that in the 90s. A lot of teams, even when I was in Washington, you get away from your original and realize, wow, the original's pretty good. Think about the Edmonton Oilers; they had some pretty nasty jerseys, eh? Then you just return back to and say, hey, man, what we had, including that beautiful orange. Or blue is just gorgeous. You don't have to fool around with anything.
Mm-hmm. Terrible logo, the NBA's Portland Trail Blazers old logo, that stupid pinwheel. Somebody not a fan of that one. 76-96 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a little too suave and sophisticated for football. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about the pirate with the knife in his teeth?
I'm not sure.
I think that's a pretty good one.
A couple of their, I don't know what origin it is, one of their original helmet logos is the greatest thing of all time. Does he have like a fedora on? That one there was gorgeous, whatever one. And I don't know.
Pirate.
Yeah.
That one's not strong.
Really?
Yeah. We are completely on opposite spectrums here of logos.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you like the Sea Dogs. Good morning, lads. As for logos, the one I've never liked was the American Hockey League's Milwaukee Admirals. It's just bad. Simmer, I'm going to defer to you on that one because I'm not familiar with the Milwaukee. All I know is that it's busy, right?
Well, I think it's shoulders up and it's an admiral and you have the admiral's hat on. I'd actually have to go through and kind of review, JR, but I don't recall. And I'm trying to also scan through. Now, I've also had a strong appetite or a lot of European hockey in my background. So if you want to get into logos and advertising and all the other things that go with that, that can kind of go next level for a lot of people who obviously can't stand that.
The worst logo in sports these days is the Seattle Kraken, hands down. That comes from Jeff. Wow.
Yeah, that surprises me. I thought that was the one thing they did right.
the color scheme, the uniforms. Yeah. For sure for Seattle for me. Again, this is all individual taste, but worst in sports. Yeah, don't know about that one. The farm team, right? Speaking of Oh, speaking of Captain Highliner, mm-hmm. is that Nathan McKinnon's Nathan McKinnon's dad?
Oh yeah. Does he look? I didn't see him. Oh, does he look like him?
Yeah, they showed him a
fisherman.
Yeah, he's got that kind of look to him. Yeah, that's not bad for him.
A little Cole Harbor hanging around, going to do a little lobster fishing. Hey,
Ron in Orleans says, "Boys, a sea dog is sailor slang for seals, sea lions, etc." That comes from Ron in Orleans. So now we thank you, Ron, for filling in. I knew there had to be a reason for it. Still a bad logo.
And I didn't know the sea lion was dangerous until 8 below, and it's chasing a dog that's running on the ice. And all of a sudden, the sea lion comes up and tries to eat it. And man.
Eat the dog?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that had a big old set of teeth on it and was a nasty piece of business, not to mention a hell of a swimmer. Now, I don't know if that's the same one in Antarctica that they would have up in St. John, if they even have any, but he was a nasty piece of business.
Hurricane's logo is brutal, right, Sunshine?
Yeah, I can't get away from that. I've never, that whole part, I've never been.
The toilet swirl.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I don't think maybe people down there, it's obviously. Actually, the one I don't mind of theirs, and I think it's either a third jersey thing. They've got the one with the hockey stick with the hurricane flag, the torn kind of the warning, hurricane warning.
Yes.
That one's kind of a neat one, but it's more of a third jersey. Yeah. It's not a regular logo.
Also celebrating destruction. I guess you could call yourself the Volcanoes if you've been, but the idea the hurricane rolls up the coast and kind of wrecks your state is also an interesting celebration,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
let's
celebrate something really terrible.
Let's celebrate the tornado devastation we just went through and call our team that.
All right, 7:41. This text comes in. Morning, guys. Thoughts on Bob McKenzie's list? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Let's get into it. Bob McKenzie, he's still a TSN hockey insider, somewhat retired, but still loves the draft and still loves kind of put together the prospects list. And Bob puts together a list, a beginning of the season, a midseason, and then his final draft rankings. And this, again, is not Bob going out and telling you what he thinks based on his scouting. It's the same 10 guys from usually head scouts of various NHL teams. He's been surveying these guys forever. And what makes this list always, to me, the most interesting, with all due respect to people who have pulled together a living out of putting together lists that fans there. I tell you what, you read lists and it doesn't even seem to matter who puts them together. People consume this stuff like crazy.
Yeah.
But Bob McKenzie's list is the definitive list because it's the one that is the most accurate in terms of where guys are getting picked. Maybe the biggest miss he's had, and this goes to show you maybe how off the board the Sens went with Tyler Boucher, was last year. I think Bob had him at number 31 and the Sens had him at number 10. So this list is where guys are likely to be picked in the range of where they're going to be picked. Yeah. And what's interesting about Bob's list, the final list that came out yesterday, we have been hearing about Shane Wright as the number one pick in the 2022 draft for, two or three years since he was granted exceptional status to skate in the Ontario Hockey League as a 15-year-old. Up until yesterday, he was the consensus number one pick in the draft. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Well, according to Bob McKenzie and his scouts list that he goes through, maybe not so much.
It is razor thin between Shane Wright and Juraj Slafkovský. But Wright had a good season, he was expected to have a great season. He scored more goals 2 years ago as a 15-year-old in his OHL rookie season than he did this year. And he still put up 90-plus points for the Kingston Frontenacs. He's still got a great all-around game. He's still a tremendous skater, and he's got a good shot and all those things. But just left the scouts feeling like they wanted a little bit more from him. But as I said, and bear in mind, five scouts have Slafkovský at number one in our survey. Four scouts have Wright. If you were to interview another 10 scouts, it could easily flip back the other way. It is that tight.
All right. And further to that, Bob's got a big, long written piece at TSN.ca where he gets into a bit more detail than that right there. Just on the two guys at the top, he had this quote from an NHL team's head scout. "It's a peculiar draft year. Neither one of them, Slafkovský or Wright, are locks to be first-line players in the NHL. I'm not saying one or the other couldn't be first-liners. They're both good prospects. But unlike a lot of years, this draft doesn't have any great prospects. There are no slam dunks. There are things I like about both guys, but I have some reservations too." End quote. That coming from an NHL team's head scout.
Yeah, and just interesting, Jer. And in watching Shane Wright, my main view, and I went to a 67s game, didn't pay much attention. World Junior, one game was beyond underwhelming, but it's one game. It's not a big deal. Second game, he's shifted from center to wing, kind of the same thing. It is all really interesting and very unique. And when I went to that 67s game and my buddy Sean Reed was celebrating, all the talk in after the game, because Ottawa was playing Kingston, was about Shane Wright and how good he is. What do you think of him? And, you know, the big word that came along was COVID. Like, how do you factor in him missing an entire year of hockey, coming back to a game, and the big picture of a young man? Has that really set him back that much? Or, you know, and Slakowski to go through this, I guess, say it's a really interesting debate. And as to what the level is, I couldn't begin to tell you. But what is very fascinating is what the Montreal Canadiens will do and what that path will mean for the two players. And at the same time, I kind of make an assumption the New Jersey Devils at Tuukka want the best player. But when I've already built my team around Heischer and Hughes, do you want the bigger winger versus drafting a centerman? And would he ever drop to the third spot? I don't think it's likely, but hey, when Bob McKenzie bring this up, that means there is a legitimate and very healthy debate. But whoever is drafted by Montreal, if Wright is drafted, the pressure on him versus a Slovak, I assume you just leave him in Finland for another year and let him do his thing. Only had 10 points in the league last year, so it'll be fun to watch next week.
We know all of, if you're in any way invested into the Ontario Hockey League, etc. You know all about Shane Wright. We don't need to litigate any further about his attributes, etc. Yuri Slavkovsky is I think less known.
Mm-hmm.
He is a Slovak winger, 6'4". He's got great size. He's a really good skater. But his year, he played in Finland this year in the men's league. And had 5 goals. Now he's 17 turning 18, but he had 5 goals. What was really odd was that at major tournaments and at the Olympics, he was at times the best player on the ice. And so it's, you kind of got to balance off this player that we saw in short bursts, but playing against, you know, not the best in the world because the NHLers weren't there, but against some really good caliber and older players.
Yeah.
At tournaments like Worlds and Olympics, and he looked really good, but yet playing in the league the entire year, I don't want to say I'm not watching the games. I'm just saying that the statistically, he didn't do very much at all in that Finnish league. So that's a hard one to weigh as well. But you got the big skating winger that I think's got lots of promise versus the guy who's been the consensus guy forever. Shane Wright's not small, but he's not big. He's medium sized, but he plays center. He's got lots of attributes. But he has not, and this goes back to Craig Button when we talked about Brad Lambert, and why has Brad Lambert gone from 2 years ago as a 16-year-old playing at the World Juniors, and we're all like, oh my God, when that guy comes out in the draft, you know, he's gonna be unbelievable. And now Craig Button has him, what, number 42 on his list, because he hasn't advanced, and everybody else has passed him.
Yeah, yeah.
Shane Wright, to a much lesser extent, feels like his development has stalled a little bit, right? Which is not to say he's not going to be a good player. Not to say he's not going to be an NHL player for sure, but to this scout's quote that I just read right there, you know, he's not even a surefire first liner, according to this guy, which, you know, when you think about getting the first overall pick, you're thinking you're getting a guy that's in your top two or your top line every single time.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to Yakupov. I don't feel that, Jared. And I do when you look at two different situations in Lambert or anybody, you ask yourself, okay, has it been stalled because physically he's not matured, right? He was maybe ahead of his peer group, real good player. Is it situational, organization he's playing in? And when you factor in Finland, you know, simple part of a kid like that coming in for guys that are mostly Finnish on the team. Now, if you're a real good player, of course, they're going to play you up. But these guys are making a living. They take you very slow. They develop you. They don't look at you as some stud coming in to save the day. And in a case of Wright, hey, I do look at COVID. Do you not think that might have stalled it a little bit? But I'm not, guess, given an answer either way. I'm just curious to see them because, as I said, it is a really interesting projection as to what both or any team's going to do. And I find it a bit hard to believe neither of them could be first-round players or first-line players, Jared, but the hell do I know? Like I said, I just haven't watched them enough. And, you know, you get to some of these tournaments and some of the goals that were scored in the Olympics by the Slovak, Slavkovsky, not the best teams in the world, but the other part you have to just factor in is look at the whole body of work. And then the one you really rely on the most, Jared, and I'll go back to even last summer, the peer group tends to me, you know, the World Junior's nice. What are you doing against your own peer group? That's really where the scouts get the best cross-section and best feel of where you're at and trying to project you out.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the rest of Bob's list in terms of the next names on there, and this is why this is of interest if you're an Ottawa Senator fan, is that we're sitting here right now, 8 days away from the draft, and the Sens have the 7th pick in the draft. Now, will they end up picking there? I think a lot of people are of the opinion maybe they won't. They're going to trade out of that spot either for an established NHL player or to trade back to add a player and take a pick further back in the first round or whatever. But Logan Cooley, who's a smaller American center, he got the one other vote of the 10 scouts that Bob McKenzie polled as far as the number one vote. So he got one vote, so he's number three overall. Simon Nemec is a six-foot Slovak defenseman. I've watched him a few times. That's a nice player. Mm-hmm. He's a really, really right-shot defenseman. He's really nice. He's number four. And then this is the guy. If he fall, if the Sens stay at number seven and he's available, he's ranked fifth on Bob's list. This has Ottawa Senators to me written all over it just based on their draft history. Cutter Gauthier, who is a U.S. development team, a winger, good size, American. If you look at what the Sens have traditionally done, especially at the, and not necessarily is not the most super skilled guy in the world, but just a solid prospect. Mm-hmm. You go through the Sens draft history, right? It's especially at the top, right? There's a lot of Americans, obviously coming out of the U.S. college or the developmental, system. They like bigger players. There's no doubt about that. So, and they, I don't want to say they tend to always defer to kind of physical attributes more so than taking a risk. But I think if we're being fair, other than Tim Stützle, and that was kind of like you were going to take him at number three. Other than that, this, if you look at the Sens, I think the consensus have been by the people that follow the draft is they tend to play it a little bit on the safe side, right? They don't really gamble in terms of skill. They take guys by and large who are kind of, you can project out what they're going to be, solid players.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so
yeah.
That, a lot of people, so, and plus that, plus the name, right? I mean, Cutter Gauthier. If that doesn't have, if that doesn't have hockey player written all over it, I don't know what does.
Yeah, no, and you look up front now, Batherson, a whole different story, Norris being a trade, I agree on Stützle, Tkachuk is kind of the ultimate package, so those four there, but when you do mix in Greg, you mix in Pinto, well, if that's what you're going to use on the safe side to have good players versus...
No, I'm talking top of the draft.
No, no,
I'm
know, but just in general, Jaron, and I also wonder because I have never been a part of a team that had a trend necessarily where they stuck just because they've drafted. Now, if your scout is living in Ann Arbor, that's one thing, but I'd also look at this if I'm a Sens fan. After what you did with Boucher last year and where he's at, I'm actually swinging. This would just be a guesstimate. I'd actually swing far over the other way and expect them to draft a highly skilled player. That's just my guess because you swung so far the other way on what looks like a bottom 6 foot soldier. That would just be my prediction if they hold on to the pick.
If they do that, then and they're going to go for that and take a bit of a swing on a skilled player, then I think you got to look at Finnish winger Joakim Kemmel, who I think were we not watching in the green room when they played Canada at the U18s back in May?
Yeah.
And man alive, he was. There were some shifts out there. He was the best player on the ice. Like you can see, he is super skilled. He's not big, but he's got an unbelievable shot. He can really score. But he had a shoulder injury toward the end of the year, and his play over in the, he played in the Finnish men's league as well. He was great to start the year, which shot him up some boards, and he was ranked like maybe even as high as number three and four. Now he's kind of fallen back because the end of his year was not as good. But if you're thinking that way, Simmer, and that may be the way that the Sens look if they stay at seven, excuse me, then that may be the player potentially. If they're going for a forward, then he would be the guy.
And I only try to gauge that in the case of Mann. Now, I don't know all the influence. I don't know to the draft last year. You always have people involved, and Pierre Dorion's very involved. But I also look and say to myself, I can't imagine Jared, and God, he lives in the Maritimes, but hey, lock it in. It happens to be that when they drafted Stützle and Sanderson, of course they took Klevin, other players, it certainly worked and you like it, but I would think that, gosh, he's as open-minded as anybody out there that we need a good player, and tendency, at least my experience is, when you've swung one way that maybe you would do the other way versus kind of doubling down with the same thing. But it's a fun theory. Now you get into the part of, and people not talking, yeah, so much of it is the you know, the play or the pick being in play, but it's also in trying to figure out when it comes to the draft chair, and I've said this many a time, what is that value of that pick? And is somebody waiting until the seventh pick on the draft floor to sincerely see who's available? You know, when what seems to, once again, another draft where, you know, there's a lot of different variations, what will that look like when it comes to the seventh pick? If you are looking to move it, would not be shocked if it goes right down to the wire.
I should mention that Kemmel, by the way, was number seven on the list, which is where the Sens are. So if everything went according to the list, that he would be the player that would be there. David Juracek, who is the Czech defenseman, who he got injured in the first game of the World Juniors.
Yeah.
right shot defenseman, really big guy. He is number six on the list. So there's your top seven. So, again, it's Slavkovsky, then Wright, then Logan Cooley. Yeah. Nemec, the right shot defenseman, the Slovak. Cutter Gauthier from the U.S. development team. David Juracek, the Czech defenseman, who was injured for the last half of the year. And then Joachim Kemmel, Finnish winger. Those are your top seven. Yeah. If the Sens, well, if they stay at seven, they'll get their choice of one of those seven players.
Yeah,
we'll
and you go back a few years ago, Jer, I thought for Quinton Byfield, thank God he didn't go to Ottawa. Just go to L.A., do your thing. I don't need Logan Brown comparisons. What is going on with Shane Wright right now? And that's not why you would switch or deviate if you're Montreal. But, man, I think that is such a different animal. Not to mention, from what I'm reading, the Habs may end up with all of the first five picks in the draft.
They're trading for all of them, aren't they?
I think Anderson, Petrie, Gallagher, and I can't remember who else, Drouin will end up bringing that in. But it just the draft in Montreal adds more intrigue. And the fact that the first pick overall, it's just going to set up for so much talk, so much rumor. And history tells us and experience tells me, all this drafting up and wanting to add picks, man, it's so difficult to do. And, you know, hey, you can argue about the top two players, but there appear to be a number of other very good players that a lot of teams are picking in the top 10. Now you could also say, hey, for teams that want to rebuild, how badly do they want to switch out? Or, I'm sorry, that want to, you know, fast forward things. So, yeah, it's going to set up for a fun week.
Would you consider, now given his body of work, and he was drafted in 2012, so we're talking 10 years ago, Cody Ceci was drafted with the 15th pick in the first round of the draft.
Yeah.
Without looking at who was drafted around him, but just as if you think about in your time in the league of, okay, we got the 15th pick in the draft, George McPhee. Would you be happy with now seeing his body? Would Cody Ceci, would you say that's a pretty successful pick as a mid first round draft pick?
I would say the way he settled in, I use a couple examples. We drafted Brendan Witt and Nick Boynton. And, you know, again, to different variations, JR. Oh, I think the fact you've settled in, you found a player right there. No, absolutely how you're measuring it. And because I think Slater Cuckoo is local. You know, he's now a very much and has really been from day one a very fringe player, right? And those were kind of the comparisons. Now, Tom Wilson just after. But in trying to find a defenseman and ultimately argue, I'd say he's a four. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
That's
a
spot he slides
into.
But
I guess my point in all this is I think we all of us, tend to get overwhelmed by this first-round pick. And there's a difference between a first-round pick that's the first overall, and that's in the top five, and then in the top 10, and then from 10 to 20, and then from 20 on. Like, there's a huge difference. My point being, if you have the 15th pick in the first round of the draft, you go through it. By and large, if you get a solid NHL player, you're doing very well. I think a lot of people they just hear first round pick and they think, guy's got to be a star. If he's not a star, it's a blown pick. It's not the case. By and large, most of the superstars in the NHL end up being the very top picks in the draft. And by the time you get down to the 15th pick in the first round, You're hoping to get a guy who can be a good contributor to your team, a fourth defenseman, a middle nine forward, or something like that. Like you're doing well if you do that. And I think we all get sideswiped a little bit by just this whole aura of the first round pick. They are not all created equal. They really aren't.
But I'll also go back and again, different life and different world, how it affects an athlete. Cody Ceci, drafted by Ottawa, playing for the 67s. To me, first of all, local is different. Would it have been better if he played somewhere else? Absolutely. Going from Toronto then to Pittsburgh, you find he'll settle in, and now he's gone to Edmonton. And as far as the studs, I mean, that's athleticism, JR. The top five, and to reverse that, you think about Galchenyuk to Kotkaniemi. To a lot of teams, like people also think it's just a layup. Well, the fortunes of the Philadelphia Flyers, I'm not saying are night and day, but I'm assuming if they had Cale Makar in their lineup versus having drafted Nolan Patrick, like, man, you talk about franchise altering when you have the opportunity, and that's where I also go back to Ottawa. When you can pick up Ridley Gregg and you can pick up Pinto, Lassie Thompson, JBD, well, that's a pretty good track record, JR, of guys that we all project to play. We'll all get into the, there's no guarantees.
There's no projections.
Well, there's no guarantee. Well, they all are tracking to me to be NHL players. Well, that's when you start to look at a staff and say, okay, I could probably pick Connor McDavid and I might pick Dreisaitl, but what the hell are you doing after that? And what are the kind of the diamonds in the roughs or other players that you're finding? So, yeah, I totally agree. But I think a lot of people think, well, top five pick is automatically a star. Well, yeah, there's lots of drafts and lots of history that show us that's not the case whatsoever. And then you look at the Boston Bruins situation. You know, I mean, you know, again, the team that actually historically has drafted quite well. they have put themselves where it's kind of biting them finally into a franchise-altering situation of, and if you go back to that, I think that was Don Sweeney having those three picks in a row, JR, was expecting to make a trade. And then I think that really all of a sudden it showed up where they had three picks in a row.
They weren't ready.
And it really felt like that. Like it felt like, oh my God, are you serious? Who do we got? Let's get the jerseys
get your
ready.
List.
Let's get the jerseys ready.
The reason I brought up CeCe was not about to talk about Cody CeCe in particular,
no,
but just talk about, speaking of Sen's draft history, and I know Trent Mann hasn't been doing the pick. He's only been doing the picking since 2018 or 2017, I should say. But if you look at their first round picks, there has not been. So Cody CeCe, okay, and I'm going back the last 10 years. So look at their picks that played junior hockey. I say Cody CeCe was 10 years ago. Curtis Lazar.
Mm-hmm. You had Pumple,
right?
Pumple and Prince.
Yeah, but I'm just talking first, you know, okay, you're going further back. I'm just going last 10 years.
Yeah.
So Curtis Lazar, mid first round pick, mm-hmm. you know, he's an NHL player, but a fringe guy.
Yeah.
Right. Then in 14, they didn't have a first round pick. Then Thomas Chabot, no doubt, home run pick, really good pick for the middle of the first round. Logan Brown ends up looking like he's gonna, you know, at best be a fringe NHL player.
And they had White in that same first round with Chabot.
Right, but he's an American player. I'm just talking about CHL players now.
Okay.
So I'm just talking about draft tendencies in the last 10 years when the Senators have picked in the first round of the draft. Thomas Chabot aside, they haven't had a lot of success with junior hockey players.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why if you can look at the last 5 years, they haven't picked anybody from the Canadian Hockey League when they've had any of their high picks.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't know. Maybe that's just the way their board fell.
Yeah,
I don't know that they're biased against Canadian Hockey League players.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if you look at the lists, that's what's happening. And when they drafted out of the CHL in the last 10 years, in the first round, outside of Thomas Chabot, they have not had a whole lot of success.
Yeah, and I also feel like the CHL, no doubt, JR, and especially the OHL, is the most scouted league. And when you get into some of the projections, diamond in the rough, certainly, when you look at the development program, you know, that's an interesting one to come in and say, hey, you know what, we're going to draft Jake Sanderson, Clevin. And then the other one is, okay, we can talk about some of the top kids. When you go over to the European League and you end up drafting, and part of the reason they drafted Yarvente was because the season had started again, right, before the draft was held.
Mm-hmm.
In trying to look at those kids, and that's where Detroit for years drafted their underdeveloped Swedish kid who didn't play at all. I mean, Nick Lidstrom, the greatest defenseman in the history of mankind, you know, drafted where he was at. So, you know, that to me is where the OHL or the CHL can be almost overlooked. And then where are you going to find the diamonds in the rough? I think you do have a better chance in Europe or with the development program.
First round of the NHL draft is next Thursday. They've changed the calendar a little bit, so wrap your head around the fact that the first round is now this year in a Thursday, not Friday, and the second round is on Friday, not Saturday, and it's actually during the day, not at night. So Thursday and Friday is the NHL draft. Next week, Sens, by the way, have two second-round picks, number 39, which is their own, and number 64, which is the second rounder they got from Tampa. All right, just past 8 o'clock, we'll take a top-of-the-hour update. Anything you want to chat about, if you're a big draft nick or whatever, player you'd like to see the Sens pick, let us know. Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question, by the way. Who's the best player in the draft, in your opinion? Is it Shane Wright? Is it Slavkovsky? Or is it other? Fill in the blank. Vote on our website at tsn1200.ca. We'll take a break. Top-of-the-hour update. We're coming back and talking hockey with Dave Poole and our TSN Hockey Insider. That's coming up next here on TSN 1200.